Yeah. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. You're on with Green Diva Meg.
Green Dude Paul.
And Green Diva Lynn.
Yay.
I guess it would have been polite to let both Green Divas go first. Sorry, Lynn.
No, it's the 2000s.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Equal opportunity.
You're my bookends.
Right.
Well, Paul's, you know, the other thing is it's probably easier for him to go because he can see me when I'm, you know, whatever. And so anyway, we have a busy, busy show, which is pretty much all Lynn's fault because she's like.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you and curse you, Lynn.
I know. She's so busy out there making friends and.
Yeah, why do you have to be so friendly?
Scheduling things.
I can't help it.
So efficient and competent, all those things.
Well, you know what's really cool?
I have made my share of mistakes.
Nah.
That's a whole nother show.
That's all. What I love is that she's on top of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in
no
terms
doubt.
Of so she is super
finger on the pulse.
She really does. So like before we go and
I'm
talk
blushing.
Much about
she blushes green.
She blushes green. She probably bleeds green too. I want to mention our fabulous sponsor, buygreen.com, who helps us do what we do. They are passionate and trusted source for all things green, whether it's home or office. And I recommend going there because they're having back to school specials right now. Right?
Yeah.
So
right on.
Do it, people. Buygreen.com.
Or go even better, go through thegreendivas.com through the marketplace.
Duh. Go to the Green Divas marketplace and click through and get the Green Diva discount, baby.
There you go.
All right.
So lots of stuff going on this week, but before we even get into the rundown, let's just talk for a minute about all this fun stuff we're doing. Like, we got so much going on.
It is a busy time of year.
Right. I'm sweating here because it's just so
just thinking about
much,
all
yeah.
the effort you're going to have to put out.
That and, you know, mental pause. And I also want to mention that people should go to Stitcher and find us because Stitcher is actually really cool and they've upgraded their players and things and their apps. So go look up the Green Divas and please make us one of your favorites in Stitcher. And please let people know, you know, do a review. A nice one, of course.
Yes. Yeah. Keep the bad stuff to yourself.
We like constructive criticism too. That's important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Those you can send in an email.
Yeah, exactly. Keep them out of our Stitcher ranking. So what else have you been busy with, Miss Lynn? I know you've been conjuring up some giveaway.
Well, I've been working on a World Water Week post that I actually just published it this afternoon.
Right.
Because World Water Week is next week. You'll be talking to Maury Schofield with water.org about World Water Week. She'll be giving you some more information about that.
Yeah, that's going to be later in the show. You're giving up your My Earth 360 spot for Maury so we can talk about the water thing.
She just gives till it hurts.
I do.
Now
and
she's bleeding green.
We'll be doing a Twitter party next week. I don't have the date yet, but stay tuned for that.
That's going to be fun.
What do we wear? What do we wear to a Twitter party?
We need to raise
pajamas?
Awareness about
cool.
water issues.
Water and Twitter, they go well together.
Why not? Yeah.
Indeed.
I love Twitter parties because, you can go in your pajamas. I don't have to wear a bra. I don't have to put makeup on.
That's how I work all day long when I'm home.
Paul's just looking at me like, this is not a good party.
Yeah. Take two.
This is scary.
Leave it on the loose.
It's a scary party. So, and we're getting ready for our Hawaii trip just to rub it in to poor Paul's face some more. He's bitter.
I've been using my Champion juicer.
Isn't that cool?
I love that thing.
I love my Champion juicer. And mine is ancient.
That was quite a segue from Hawaii to juice. The rest of us can't keep up with you.
In my mind at all times.
Folks, don't worry about them. We'll catch up with them soon.
Yeah.
No, we're doing a juicing and smoothie workshop when we're there.
That explains it. Got it.
Yeah.
Thanks for filling in the obvious.
I knew what I was talking about in my head.
That's all that matters.
She knew what she was talking about. Yeah, we're gonna have a pretty interesting time there. And I know we're staying, other than the Kalani retreat place, we're also going to be staying somewhere else. And did you?
At the Hawaii Island retreat.
Hello, yes. It's all
Which
a retreat, man.
That's amazing.
And I think
it's the gathering place of peace-giving stones.
Oh, come on. That sounds so cool.
What it says on the website.
Really? I can't wait to be there.
I know.
Sorry, Paul.
I'm looking at the pictures right now.
And then, yeah, well, all this cool news is coming out. All our friends are gathering for this climate march.
Yeah, that's really big. Mm-hmm. 350.org and everyone else organizing for September 21st in Manhattan. They're expecting hundred thousand plus. It's going to be.
Right.
And that's the day we leave. Can you imagine?
It's also the day of so many local activities. It's also the week of Drive Electric Week.
Yeah.
We can talk about that September 15th to the 21st.
I guess I'll be driving the electric toothbrush. I don't really have one of those either, but I don't have an electric car, so maybe I'll ride my bike.
Well, we'll be in Hawaii, so whatever.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
We'll be in the canopies.
I think you guys should drive your electrics to Hawaii.
Yeah.
I think that'll work well.
Well, just think about all the stuff we're missing that week, but especially the climate
march.
Let
me get out my really small violin here.
Yeah, he's like, oh, my God. So what else do we have coming on the show today? We have Joshua Horowitz, who's the author of...
Josh Horowitz.
Horowitz. I thought it was Joshua Horowitz.
Okay. Oh, well, he probably goes by Joshua.
Okay.
I call him Josh.
Well, yes, because you're intimate friends with him now.
She's on an abbreviated name basis with everyone. Right.
Oh, you mean my buddy Josh? Anyway, he was really cool, and Paul and I had a chance to speak to him about his book, War of the Whales, which also he has a website called warofthewhales.com. But there's just some really sad and upsetting things going on.
Yeah, the whole – it's so sad, the mass strandings of whales that goes on. It's apparently connected to naval sonar.
Right.
And now natural gas exploration. And,
yeah.
Yeah, so we just – kind of turned a blind eye towards the effect these have on nature.
I think in his book he realizes that they knew years ago that this was having an effect on them, and actually they just used the technology for their own benefit, right? They learned how to use sonar.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, it's very interesting.
It is interesting.
Terrific that people dedicate their professional lives,
but his story,
helping educate us.
His story is about actually a positive lawsuit that helped to bring about some change. So there's a good ending. It's a happy ending.
Good.
Queen of Green, Lindsay Coulter.
Yes.
She did a really fun segment, a health and beauty segment about how to be less polluted. It cracked me up, the phrasing, but it's really about how we can, not add more chemicals and toxins to our bodies, because we're all, probably wasn't born pre-polluted because I was born a long time ago.
Yeah, the 50s were really clean.
Yeah, right, I'm just thinking that.
I'm sorry, did I say that?
Oh, 60s, 50s? Honey, 60s.
Oh, yeah.
60s. Yeah.
Really?
What did you? Oh. How old do you think I am?
I thought as old as me. I was hoping.
Oh, I didn't know you were that old.
Yeah,
Paul, I'm 50s, man.
Really? I wouldn't have. Anyway.
Anyway.
I'm sure I was born pre-polluted, so let me take that back. But at any rate, to not add to the already burden on our bodies with all this pollution, it's really cute. She's got some really fun ideas. That are simple, but also, important things to think about, like things you wouldn't think. Like, oh my gosh, really? I got to worry about that.
Great segments. Hers are always pushing the envelope.
She's good. Well, she's just always so prepared. I love all these people. I love all these people. Madeline
Somerville,
who wrote a book, All You Need Is Less. So we're going to do an at-home segment with Madeline about living with less. Right?
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Simplify.
Damn.
Green Diva Kate also wrote a review about the book, so I'll be posting that later this week.
Oh, cool. Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah, we haven't heard from Kate in a while. We need a little...
I know. She's really busy.
Yeah, well, hey. I know. She's got a book and all that fun stuff, which we've got to get her hands on, right?
Mm-hmm. You should be getting a copy of that, actually.
Oh, good, because I want to get her to talk. I think she should talk to Kristen.
Mm-hmm.
I already told Kristen. So... anyway, lots of cool stuff. Anything
else
anybody can think of that we need to chat about before we move on to all?
Did we mention the giveaway?
I mentioned it and we glossed over it.
Yeah, it was kind of generic and vague.
Yeah, talk about the giveaway.
It's the Eco Sexy giveaway.
See, that's not boring.
We've got pillows and the book Eco Sex.
See?
As well as some green lube.
Just the way she said that.
How else can
funny.
I say that?
Yeah. Well, it's probably Keeping like it organic, clean. Natural, personal lubricant.
Yes. That sounds much more eloquent.
Well, I like green lube. That was funny the way you said it.
That's for your bicycle?
Yeah, exactly. It's for those parts.
Whatever you call it.
For those bits that we need to be operational if you're going to have eco-sex with really cool organic pillows.
See, Lynn, you thought you were just going to slide that right in, slide the lube right in there? But no, we're picking up on it.
Yeah, we got
That's
that.
Quite a giveaway.
It is, actually. And I just got to say, I'm sleeping on this Kapok pillow, and my neck is happy.
It
and
looks it. I can see it smiling from here.
I'm telling you, when my neck's not happy, you would know. And I don't.
Did you get a sample of the lube?
She's crying. No, actually, I did not, as a matter of fact. Oh, man, you're too much there, girl.
Oh, dear.
Well.
Just enough.
It's good that we can have a laugh, right? I mean, because there's
sure.
so much
How else do you make the green dudes uncomfortable in the studio?
You got to see gotta... his face, man. His face is like cringing.
There's so many things I want to say, but I respect our audience.
He's folded his arms. He's like, okay, I'm just going to...
Rated PG.
I'm going to endure. That's what he's saying to himself. I'm going to endure.
Can't wait to go off air and talk about this some more.
Well, everybody, stay tuned because there's lots of really cool stuff. Some of it's fun, some of it's informational, and some of it's just stuff you really got to know, right?
Hang with us.
Right on.
Okay. Stay tuned.
Want to understand what climate change is really all about? Want to get the latest environmental news? Listen to the Green Divas My Earth 360 report and hear it all from WTF. To encouraging news and ways that you can take action for the Earth. This segment is sponsored by TrueGoods.com because shopping should be fun, not frightening. TrueGoods helps you make simple choices for healthier, safer, cleaner living. Tell truth, shop good at TrueGoods.com.
Wow. Well, you know, in celebration of the upcoming World Water Week, which is a wonderful opportunity for all of us to raise awareness and get ourselves even more educated about the plight of many, many people. I mean, and the woman we're about to talk to will probably have statistics for us about shockingly how many people do not have access to clean, healthy water. Which has got an enormous impact when you think about it, because I think we take it for granted here in the U.S. But we're going to be talking to Mairéa Schofield, and she is a community manager. She does a lot of work with Water.org, which is an amazing organization. Hi, Mairéa.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you took some time to talk to us today. Because I know you're extremely busy with World Water Week coming up.
Yeah. Our organization has some plans underway. You know, the event in it's referred to as CWE is where a lot of the global leaders in this sector and who are looking to eradicate poverty in general will go and convene and talk about their approaches and sort of just their innovative solutions to making a difference in the world. And specifically, our co-founders will attend and share what Water.org is doing through our water credit program to scale the impact of getting people access to safe water in countries where unfortunately it's not an option. More than 700 million people in the world lack access to a clean drink of water.
Wow, and that was the number, yeah.
Yeah, so Megan mentioned, you know, most people don't really understand the full impact of water issues. Maybe you could help our listeners. You know, it's, you know, we all know that we need water to survive kind of physiologically, but there are empowerment issues and, you know, potential potential for so many things.
We just don't even think about it.
The one that really hit me on your website is that worldwide, 200 million work hours a day are invested by women just to get water.
Or they have to walk miles from a polluted source
in the first place, potentially, and back.
Right, yeah. You know, that statistic is something that we, it concerns us, and it leads the charge of quite a bit of our work when we look at the issues that women face, because unfortunately in developing countries, the women and children bear the primary burden of collecting water and sourcing it on a daily basis, which, you know, if you think about the whole domino effect of what those couple of hours, several miles a day are walked and time spent trying to find water, that plays into how much time then you have for other domestic activities, for attending school when it comes to children, even down to the safety that may not be there, particularly in situations where children who are young are walking alone or in small groups with other children to find water. And, you know, it is life-threatening.
Standpoint, I know that you shared this devastating statistic that every 21 seconds a child dies from a water-related illness.
Unfortunately, that won't be resolved until kids can take a clean drink of water, because what happens is not necessarily just dying of thirst, but that water could be contaminated with all sorts of bacteria and things that lead to diarrhea, and preventing the diarrhea and satisfying the thirst that comes along with that. It's not an option. And so unfortunately, the loss is due to that, around 1.5 million deaths each year. So, due to diarrhea.
Let's just say that again out loud. 1.5 million deaths due to diarrhea, which...
Right. So that'd be, statistically right now on our site, we've posted, so that's the second leading cause of death among children under 5 in the world. As I said, it's kind of the trickle-down effect again, the domino effect of what drinking unsafe water can do. So there are threats in sourcing it, there are issues with just not having access, and then even when they do achieve access, sometimes it's not the healthiest, potable water to drink, and so it can cause serious infections.
So here's an interesting thing. When you say there are threats in sourcing it, are there people that are actually fighting over water, or let's say who get robbed because, they've gathered water and someone says, hey, that's cool, I'll take that?
Yeah, certainly that's not an area that water.org has done quite much research on or focuses on. I'm sure you could probably Google the topic and find a lot of related articles.
Yeah, no, I was just curious.
I don't have any statistics to support that yet, but certainly that is an issue over water, fighting over water.
Well, human nature.
Becoming more of an issue. But again, not something water.org focuses on as much as just getting people access to water.
So,
but yes.
Tell us about the founders and the event that they'll be gathering. Who are the founders?
Sure. So the founders of water.org are Gary White. He is an engineer from the Midwest, and Matt Damon, who is an actor. And together they shared a common interest in getting people access to safe water and adequate sanitation. In 2009, they merged their two organizations, which had both been working toward the same agenda, and formed water.org.
Well, it's just amazing. And I just can't say enough about not only Matt Damon as a fabulous actor, but, another of the handful of actors that are really, really putting themselves out there and using their, their celebrity power, if you will, for good and making things happen, like water.org.
And there's really something to be said for the humble approach he takes to it. He's really more behind the scenes, and although his name and his passion and commitment are there, it's great to see that it's not just a...
Well, it's he's not doing it for PR.
Absolutely.
He really just cares. Absolutely. Have you ever met him?
Not I personally. Some of our staff had. No, but he, he does have, he is close to the organization, very close, and participates at a very large capacity compared to what I think others might with their nonprofits or their philanthropic interests, and so for that we're thankful, but he definitely leaves the job to those who have quite a bit of insight and expertise in their area.
Right.
And, supports our organization 100%.
Well, your website is a phenomenal resource for people to educate themselves on the issue. And there's even an opportunity for you to support the effort by buying yourself a bottle, being offered right there photographically by Matt Damon. But we are always trying to help our listeners know what they can do. I mean, we do a lot of work around water conservation and things here in the U.S. where, you know, people can make a lifestyle adjustment. I suppose here it's more, you know, making monetary contributions, which would be, you know, minimal from our perspective, but go to great dividends. In the places where you're doing your work, or are there policies or elected officials or corporations we can influence through our advocacy? You know, what can our listeners do to support your cause?
Well, sure. You have a couple of, you mentioned a couple of things that the listeners could do to support water.org and just the water sector in general, and of course donations. You know, you can't ship water overseas. That wouldn't be practical. It wouldn't be efficient. It wouldn't be economic. But certainly donations to the organization can give people access to safe water. And if you go to our website at water.org, you can look under our financials and you can understand what $25 really can do for an individual in their home.
That's fantastic.
And then from there, you know, you can definitely become an advocate. We have a really great platform called power.water.org, and there you can sign up and donate your voice, as we call it. So if you're on Twitter and you would like for your friends and followers to see, you know, hey, I do care about the water crisis, and I live here, and I can't help it that I have the privileges I do have, but I'm certainly willing to recognize what's going on overseas in the developing world, and I'm happy to donate my voice to support those who may not have one. And so we will post automatically for you on your Twitter timeline, no more than once a month, but it will be statistics or facts about the global water.
Oh, what a great idea.
That's really awesome.
Yeah. And speaking of Twitter, I'm just jumping in because Lynn is really behind helping us organize a World Water Week, a Green Divas World Water Week Twitter party next week. And we're really hoping that you all will be, you know, significantly part of that with us. We're still trying to put it together, and it will be put together by the time this podcast comes out. So people, you got to go to thegreendivas.com and look for information on this, and listen up and follow us on Twitter and follow water.org. What is your Twitter handle?
It's really difficult. It's at water. It's the word water. It's actually very easy to find.
So no excuses, people. You can do that.
That really flows.
Oh, ta-da. That's clever. So, yeah, please follow at water and at the Green Divas, and join us next week. Hopefully we'll have the date by the time this comes out. So anyway, anything else you want to tell our listeners about the work water.org is doing and what we need to know and do?
Yeah, well, I would just say to always be mindful that, you know, more than 700 million people don't have access to safe water. So any way you can help, even if it is being an advocate in telling others about the global water crisis, that's another step in the direction that we're working every day, which is to let people know this is an issue and there's things you can do to support us. Like I said, donations or donating your voice or just learning more and sharing word of mouth. Those are three really great ways to help support our efforts.
Well, and you personally are doing a great job because water.org is out there and you know, you're doing a good job getting it out in the digital communities and the social communities.
Thank
That's how
much.
We found out.
Yeah, and get
well,
on
I
the web.
You guys following.
Absolutely. Get on the website. The water.org website gives a great overview of all your strategic partners, which are quite impressive, and names you'll recognize. And it's just wonderful that you've taken the lead to contribute
Thank
to such
you.
A
well,
global.
Couldn't be done without the support of all those wonderful partners. So we
Absolutely.
Appreciate them. And appreciate the opportunities we get to share our work like today. So thanks for having me.
Well, thank you, Murray. And well, hopefully we'll talk to you again soon, and we'll hopefully be doing Twitter party next week. Party!
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, thanks.
Thanks.
Get all the details from this Green Divas My Earth 360 report and lots more on thegreendivas.com, that's T-H-E, greendivas.com, and myearth360.com. And remember to tell truth and shop good at truegoods.com. vibrant health and beauty radiates from the inside out. Get your glow on with Green Diva's health and beauty tips, from natural skincare to creating healthier habits that make us sparkle. I'm so happy to be talking again to Lindsay Coulter, who is David Suzuki's Queen of Green. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi there.
And I loved the topic, and I'll let you describe it, but it sounded fun when you told me. So what are we talking about today?
All right. So we're going to talk about the ABCs of avoiding everyday pollutants.
Right. And you know what? I just want to say the way that you said it, or we discussed it, was just sort of funnier, and that was how to be less polluted.
Exactly. Yeah. And this sort of stems off of the idea that, you know, the opposite, unfortunately, being that we're all born polluted.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy.
It is.
Okay, so how do we help be less polluted? Whether, and I'm thinking you're talking more about things we want to not add to our bodies rather than how to detox it?
That's right. So this is, I've got a list of 26 tips, because like I say, it's the ABCs. But
great.
Some really simple things, probably things you're already doing, other things you might not have realized you've been exposing yourself to. And so let's start with the bad news. The bad news is you are going to have to dust.
Okay. That is a bummer.
Yeah, this is a bummer. So, but in a way, you know, it's another very empowering solution to sort of detoxing the home and improving your air quality indoors. So what we know from research from the lung associations is that often our air quality inside is a lot worse than even what we're exposed to outside. And you might think that there's, you know, street pollution from the cars and, you know, pesticides being sprayed at your local park and that type of thing. But it's really things that are being shed from your television, your couch or furniture, and your electronics. So they shed things like flame retardants and other chemicals every day. And that's sort of what's building up in your household dust.
Oh, yeah, that is a bummer.
Yeah, so there's a few things you can do, from, you know, making just a simple solution of, you know, vinegar and water to dust and disinfect these, you know, any surfaces. And you just might not have to step it up and do it a little more than, you know, once a month, let's say. Another thing that you can avoid quite simply is air fresheners.
Oh, yeah.
Air fresheners in the home, you often think, again, you're sort of improving your air quality or getting rid of, you know, toxics by using them. But a lot of them have chemicals in them, and even to the degree that some of them have nerve-deadening agents in them.
That's unbelievable.
It actually prevents your nose, your ability to smell. And so there's some really, you know, tricky trade secrets. Most of the products don't even list ingredients on them. So I would stick to, you know, opening a window. I know it sounds really simple, but opening a window for good ventilation. Or if you want to buy a store-bought product, try something with only with essential oils, for example, because they're very volatile, which means they dissipate over time, where a lot of these other products, they don't go away.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the air freshener products are all about masking the smell.
Right.
So one of the things you obviously want to tell people is to figure out what's creating the problem and resolve it. And I also use baking soda. Sometimes if I have a room and there was an incident or something, I just open up I pour some in a bowl or near the incident, if it were, as it were. And the baking soda can help absorb the odor, right?
Well, and you could have a bottle of essential oil near, you know, let's say in the washroom, if we're speaking of those types of incidents, and simply just stir it in every time into the baking soda. Or what I've done, too, is in a mason jar or any kind of old peanut jar, peanut butter jar or anything to reuse, punch a few holes in it, put your baking soda, add your essential oil, and then you just give it a shake.
Oh, what a good
time.
Idea.
You just do it over the toilet, because if the baking soda goes in the toilet, it's, you know, it's just cleaning and deodorizing right there. So really simple.
Oh, there's a great idea.
DIY.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to do that.
So another one to look at is, formaldehyde exposure. So formaldehyde is the thing that, you know, pickles frogs from your biology class.
Right.
And it's also used in a lot of our clothing, believe it or not, and linens. So formaldehyde, like preservatives, are added to your pillowcases, your clothing. You know when you buy new clothes and it kind of has that feel, kind of shiny, silky, sometimes irritating feel to it? And some people are actually coming up nowadays with formaldehyde allergies. So really simply, again, don't be too freaked out about it. There's a really great way you can reduce your exposure to something like formaldehyde, which is to wash your clothes before you wear them. So anything new that you buy, just give it a good wash. You can get rid of about 60% of any chemical treatments. And those chemical treatments are added for a few different reasons. They're added to preserve, like, color fastness. They're, you know, most of our clothing, if you're not buying local, these things are being shipped from all over the world. So to prevent mold and mildew and that kind of thing in shipping containers as they come, you know, 6 months later, they are sprayed with a, you know, a sort of preservative. So that's another reason, as well as like wrinkle resistance. So no iron shirts and wrinkle-free shirts sort of best avoided.
Do they, overseas particularly, do they spray with pesticides to keep bugs out?
That would be more in the, I think that's what the formaldehyde does as far as shipping and after a product is made. Pesticides themselves would be used, like cotton, for example, is really a pesticide-heavy crop that is used, and that's in North America here too. So one way to avoid even any of this, if you have a formaldehyde allergy, is, or if you're curious if you have a formaldehyde allergy because you've had symptoms of a rash or sort of runny nose when you buy new clothes or you're out shopping in a store, it could be that. And you can buy certified organic clothing, let's say, and you'll know for sure that those haven't been treated with not just formaldehyde, but also toxic flame retardants as well.
Wow. Well, there's so many things, and I know you've got 26 more, so I'm hoping you'll share a post with us, and people can obviously go to, what is your website?
Queengreen.ca, and just look up pollutants or detoxing, and you'll find a full list of everything from, you know, which house plants are going to clean your air to, you know, why you don't need dryer sheets.
Wow. I'm really, and I'm hoping that that'll be on the Green Diva soon. Thanks so much, Lindsay. And
you're very welcome.
We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Are you sparkling yet? Well, you will be. For information on this segment and lots of other healthy, green living information, visit thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com. Looking for low-stress ways to create a healthier, non-toxic environment in your home? The Green Divas make it fun and easy with useful information for making a beautiful and eco-friendly Green Diva home. Well, this ought to be a very interesting Green Divas at Home segment with Madeline Somerville, who's the author of All You Need Is Less, and God, isn't that true? And I think we all need to hear what Madeline has to say. She's an author, writer. She has her own blog, Sweet Madeline, right, Madeline?
That's right, sweetmadeline.ca.
It's so cute. You're so cute. And I love your book. I haven't seen it yet, but I've been to, there's a website for the book as well. And people really should go check it out. And I want to get my hands on the book because I think as much as I believe in the philosophy, I just need that nudge and that little coaching and some of the, I think the tactics that you offer us. So let's talk a little bit less. I mean, a little bit less. Ha ha ha. Let's talk less. Yes, this is not good for a segment. No, let's talk a bit more about what it means to live with less and why that is important.
This is something I wanted to focus on because I was really encouraged by how this green movement has been picking up momentum in the last few years. It seems to be everywhere. Like, more people are recycling, more people are composting, you know, using plastic bags at the grocery store is decreasing. All of this stuff was so wildly encouraging, and it was really exciting to see. But I started noticing that a piece of it was missing. And we were really focused on recycling and really focused on reusing. But the reducing part of that equation had kind of been kicked to the curb. It was kind of like swept under the rug. We weren't doing that. And the reason is because nobody can sell it. You can't sell people something to tell them to buy less, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So this piece of the message kind of got lost. And I think that it's the most important piece of the message. The more you can do to reduce the amount of energy you use, to reduce the amount of possessions and items that you're buying and bringing into your home, is the simplest and easiest way that you can reduce your carbon footprint and reduce the negative impact that you have on the environment around you.
Oh, and
so I really wanted to...
And I was just going to say, and mentally, my gosh, it feels so good to get rid of stuff and have sort of clear space. And I don't know, mm-hmm. it's a good exercise.
Yeah, our culture has sort of grown to view possessions as treats and rewards. We treat ourselves, right? We go shopping and we treat ourselves. I deserve this. And you buy a little thing here and a little thing there. It feels good. But these items aren't treats. They're responsibilities. You have to find somewhere to put it. You have to clean around it. You have to maintain it. You have to repair it if it breaks. And then you have to dispose of it once it's done.
Yeah.
So the things that we look at as treats just end up costing us time and money and energy and stress. So I just really wanted to focus on reducing all of that.
Well, I just think that's fabulous. And you're right. It's not something that companies can promote. So there's all kinds of great green gadgets. Gadgets mm-hmm. for greener living. Gadgets for your kitchen so you could save more. It's all fabulous. But we went through this for a while with the Green Divas. The radio show, we started to do a regular segment about reducing because, you know, we get inundated with all kinds of these great ideas and gadgets mm-hmm. and things to buy. And we're like, well, what about... not buying.
Exactly. And that's kind of the missing piece. And to approach that in a way that's not, it's not to live without things. It's not to martyr yourself on the cause and, you know, live without things that you really need so that you're living this miserable Spartan existence. I mean, that was the other piece of the book, was that I wanted to make it fun because, you know, it is a serious issue and it's an important issue and it can feel depressing or overwhelming if you kind of look at it on the large scale. But to approach it in a way that's fun and that's simple and to say that you can have a beautiful life and a life that's easy and that fits you without having so much stuff. And in fact, it works better without so much stuff. And to approach that in a way that sort of, the book is written in a very funny, lighthearted tone and in a way that you don't judge people. Like the whole idea isn't I'm better than you because I recycle. It's just, you know, I'm recycling. Maybe tomorrow you will too. And if you want to, I would be happy to help, you know, that kind of attitude rather than this sort of judgment we get into because it just ends up being one more thing on the list. Like, you know, walk the dog and go to the gym and go green, you know, one more to do, but it should be something that's exciting and inspiring for people. So I try to encourage that.
Yeah, well, that's a very Green Diva attitude, of course. We all about low stress and making it as fun and interesting and easy as possible. So and no guilt, like none of this guilt stuff.
Mm-hmm. Do what you can, do the best that you can, and tackle, you know, one thing every day. And as you run out of make instead of buying cleaner, you can make cleaner. Or, you know, stop buying paper towels this week and see how that feels. Like just tiny little things that just add up over time and that don't take this huge drastic 180 approach, I think is so much more sustainable.
Well, and I think most people we find, and it was my experience, but most people I talk to feel similarly, that once they tried a couple things and they went, oh, that's not only easy, it's mm-hmm. really, it's saving me money and it's whatever, I like it. And they try more and it becomes more of a... you know, it just kind of snowballs into suddenly, absolutely. You know, you're someone that's using cloth napkins and recycling and maybe you have a compost.
That's right. Like if you look back where you started, the change is huge, but you small, tiny little steps one at a time. And that's the key is just like you were saying, do one thing at a time, build on your successes and let that sort of momentum keep you going. Because I find that people get excited about it once they kind of get into it. I did anyway.
Now, so let's quickly just give us like the first thing that you recommend people do in their homes when they want to consider living with less and maybe they're a little overwhelmed with, well, where do I start? What do you recommend? Mm-hmm. Where do people start?
I find that like at the checkout is the easiest place to start. So before you buy anything, ask yourself a few questions. And the four that I've kind of gotten in the habit of just unconsciously now asking myself are, do I need it? And that's like need, not want. That's
right.
The tricky part, you know, because I want so many things, but do I need it? Not really. So do you need it? That's the first question. And after that, if you do need it, can you make it? So this is where I skip a lot of purchases like cleaners and shampoos and deodorants,
yep.
You know, diapers, that kind of thing. If you can make it or if you can do something like that, that eliminates another purchase. If you can't, if you do need it and you can't make it, can you find it secondhand? So is this something that you could go down to your local thrift store or consignment store or, you know, Facebook buy and sell group and find secondhand for, you know, 10% of the cost and you're preventing something from going in the landfill?
Right.
That's a great option.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, if you do need it, you can't make it, you can't find it secondhand, buy the best quality that you can.
Yeah.
So don't buy plastic. Don't buy the thing that's on sale for a dollar. You know, if you're looking for a juice jug, don't buy a plastic one. Buy a really nice, solid glass one. Or if you need, you know, flip-flops, buy a good leather pair that's going to last you a few years rather than a pair you're going to have to buy again every summer. And that's just going to cut down the amount of waste. It's going to cut down the amount of, you know, unnecessary clutter in your house. And you're going to be left with a few good quality stuff, things that are going to last you rather than, you know, junk that you have to keep buying and throwing out over and over.
I love it. I love it. And I'm looking forward to, like I said, getting my hands on the book and being inspired a bit. I am inspired just by speaking with you about it. I'm looking around the studio even. I'm like, really? I could probably get rid of that box. Yeah, I can. So, I mean, not only getting rid of things, but I do practice those questions when I go to make a purchase. And, you know, thusly, I find that I don't buy much. I mean, other than my regular food and whatever supplies that I'm used to, I buy so much less. And guess what? My garbage is a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
Yay! Go me! Anyway, well, thank you so much for this first segment. I'm going to look forward to talking with you more and hopefully doing some other segments. And I want everybody to check out sweetmadeline.com and check out her book, All You Need Is Less.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. Find out more about this Green Divas at Home segment and lots of other great low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green at thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com.
The Green Divas get to talk to so many inspiring people who each in their own way is helping us find a deeper shade of green. Here's just one of them. Enjoy.
Wow. Well, I'm really looking forward to talking today to Joshua Horowitz, who's a science writer and the author of War of the Whales, which is a Simon & Schuster published book. And, you know, there's so many reasons we need to start paying attention more. And anyway, Joshua, thank you for calling in. How are you?
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And do you like to be called Josh or Joshua?
Josh is what my friends call me.
Well, I'm going to call you Josh then.
Okay.
Be, you know, whatever. Presumptuous.
Friendly.
That's the word I'm looking for. Be friendly. So talk to us a bit about your book, which, you know, and folks should go online, by the way, to waroftheWhales.com, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And you have a whole lot of information there that's really instructive and informative. But tell us a bit about how you even got into this.
Well, like any writer, I'm always looking for a great, truly untold story, and that's frankly what first drew me to writing this book, because it's on one hand a very unlikely tale and yet a very inspiring one, because it's really the story of two men. One is a marine mammal biologist who is studying whales, and another was a environmental lawyer and who teamed up to take on the largest navy in the world when they figured out that a certain kind of sonar they were using was causing mass strandings of certain species of whales, and that it was happening repeatedly around the world. So, you know, I heard about the story because it was a legal case, and it was being covered in the press as a lawsuit. But really, as I dug deeper, I found there were so many levels of the story that just I had no idea about. And I know something about whales and something about environmental issues because I've been tracking them for some time with interest. But this was just a story that... I thought it needed to be told.
Well, and like we were talking a little bit before we went on the air, if you've ever seen these horrifying pictures of what it looks like when a whale or a whole mess of whales beach themselves, it's so upsetting. I don't, you know, it's very upsetting.
Well, this, It's upsetting, and it was it caught the attention of scientists because there are certain species of whales that strand not uncommonly. You may remember back in December there was a pod of pilot whales that stranded in Florida, and those are whales that typically are kind of a follow-the-leader type of whale, and if the lead whale gets disoriented by whatever cause and heads into shore, they'll follow.
Right.
But in 2000, my book really begins on a beach in the Bahamas in 2000, where this whale researcher had been studying this colony of what are called beaked whales in the deepest underwater canyon in the world, the Great Bahama Canyon, which is four times wider and deeper than the Grand Canyon.
Wow.
And so this is enormous underwater canyon where this pod, this community of beaked whales had been living for tens of millions of years, and they had evolved their own biosonar to hunt at depth in this canyon, in the dark depths of this canyon. This species of whales never strands alive. They, you know, occasionally a whale will die of natural causes and wash ashore in a storm. But what was remarkable is on this day, when Ken Balcom was about to head out to do his daily survey of, you know, tracking these whales in the canyon, and they spend almost no time on the surface. They're mostly diving at depth. Suddenly, one whale stranded right in front of his house, and that was stunning in itself. And
right.
Then he heard there's another whale stranded down the beach, and suddenly there were 17 of these whales on the beaches and untold others that hadn't made it to the beach. And that is not where these whales belong. And these whales did not strand dead. They stranded alive, and he and his volunteer helpers spent the day pushing these whales back out to sea. But he knew that if a whale like this makes it all the way to the beach, it's in bad shape. And not surprisingly, there were several dead whales the next morning. Some of them, you know, have been half eaten by sharks. Some of them,
right.
they don't belong in the shallows, these kind of whales. They live their whole lives in this deep canyon. So he knew something was desperately wrong here. And fortunately, he had the presence of mind to collect an evidence trail, because without that evidence trail, there would have been no lawsuit, and there would have been no accountability ultimately.
Wow. So you got interested in this and really followed the story, followed these two gentlemen in their quest to get the United States Navy to back off of some of their sonar equipment?
Yeah, I really followed the story in two directions. So I followed it back historically, and that's where sort of the hidden gems were, because nobody, I'd never heard this stuff, and I don't think it's ever been reported in books or in journalism. It turns out the Navy has a 50-year-old marine mammal research program. In addition to training dolphins for harbor patrol and mine sweeping, which is somewhat well known, they at the same time had been trying to reverse engineer the whale's own echolocation talents called biosonar that the whales had evolved over millions and millions and millions of years. The Navy wanted to try to understand how they did it. You know, it being,
right.
You know, can retrieve objects from the mud, and, you know, under 6 feet of mud, they can find anything in the dark ocean using sound. And the Navy was trying to do this to track Soviet submarines.
Right.
So they embarked on a decades-long research program to reverse engineer this biosonar and incorporate it into their own sonar technology. And the tragic irony is that part of the product of that research was this super sonar that was driving whales onto beaches, which is a lethal destination for whales.
Oh, man. Yeah, that, and I guess all of the exploration that the oil companies are now doing off the coastlines, right?
Yeah, well, the larger problem here, I mean, naval sonar is a real problem, and it's an unsolved problem. Not unsolved. There have been tremendous advances, and the reason I like this story is that these two men were able to take the Navy to court and all the way to the Supreme Court. So, you know, they were able to hold this Navy that previously had pretended there were no environmental protection laws surrounding marine mammals, which had been on the books for decades, and they had just ignored them. They brought them to court and made them accountable to the laws, and now the Navy does do these environmental research, environmental impact statements on their coastal U.S. ranges. But they're not doing that, and this is, by the way, all about training. It's all about war games. It's not about the use of sonar in battle situations.
Right.
It's about training to fight, which is, you know, part of fighting, and it's not unimportant, but it's certainly more manageable in terms of where you train and when than a battle. So in any case, the Navy, you know, is still causing mass strandings of whales. As recently as early April, on Crete, five beaked whales stranded during U.S. and Greek and Israeli joint naval exercises. So this is an ongoing issue, and the larger issue for whales and all marine life is really noise pollution in the ocean, which is not a well-understood issue, but it's certainly a big problem for whales and all marine life. I mean, they found that even coral withers in the face of chronic noise pollution, and this is coming not just from Navy sonar, but from oil and gas exploration, as well as international shipping, which is just a constant drone of noise underwater. And anyone who read the paper today may have noticed that the Obama administration just gave the green light to oil and gas companies to start exploring for oil and gas just off the Atlantic coast, all the way from Florida up to the Delaware Bay, which is much of the East Coast. And this involves something called air guns, and they're called air guns because they send the loudest industrial noise in the ocean anywhere are these air guns, which fire compressed air and this really concussive force that's tremendously loud, and it shoots down from the surface all the way to the ocean floor and then penetrates the ocean floor by about 50, I shouldn't say exactly how much because I'm not sure, but it goes deep into the ocean floor so they can see if there are pockets of potential oil or gas there. And that's useful to the oil companies to know that, but it's very hazardous to the whales that are migrating along the coast, most notably the North Atlantic right whale, which is the most endangered whale left on the planet. There are only 500 of them, and this is their migratory path. So if you can imagine trying to migrate through a firing range of air guns that are going off every 6 seconds on these, you know, crisscross patterns, you know, across these potential oil fields, it's really a nightmare for whales.
And are the companies held to any standards in terms of when and how? Like, are the whales on – they have a certain migratory pattern, I'm sure, and a time schedule that they relatively keep,
no? Well, I mean, you know, this is always – the devil is always in the details. And, you know, for sonar, they have something called, you know, what the environmentalists have succeeded in enforcing to some degree are what are called geographic and seasonal exclusions, so that if the whales are migrating through a habitat at a certain time, the Navy is supposed to not do exercises there. And again, it requires some research to know when the whales are going to be there. In the Bahamas, for instance, the Navy had never trained in those waters before and hadn't bothered, even though they filed an environmental assessment that was clearly just a checkbox kind of pro forma thing. Nobody really investigated whether there were whales in the canyon that they were doing the exercise in. So in terms of oil and gas, it's tougher to regulate oil and gas for, I mean, they are supposed to be regulated, they are supposed to be taking environmental precautions, but even their own assessments, so they have to do this plan in advance to get approval and permits. And by their own plan, they're going to, you know, they're not saying it's not going to hurt animals. They're saying, well, we can reduce the risk to whales and marine mammals, and fewer of them will die and be harmed and whatnot. But if you're a North Atlantic right whale, which, by the way, of course, were driven to the brink of extinction by American whalers a generation earlier, if you're one of the survivors, 500 is right on the edge of what's known as biological extinction, meaning you don't have enough biological diversity in a group of 500 whales stretched over thousands of miles to really procreate. So they're right there on the edge, and they've climbed up from 300 to 500 over the last decade due to a lot of very intensive conservation work to try to avoid ship strikes and things like that. And so now they're about to unleash this acoustic storm on their migratory paths. And, yeah, some of them might die, and a lot of them will be chased out of their feeding habitat and migratory pathway, but we'll find our oil fields. And I don't want to be glib about it, but, you know, it's one thing if you're saying, oh, we have to find a submarine that's about to sink us. If it's, oh, we're looking for more oil so we can put more oil rigs here and create more sound and noise in the ocean, I think that's a case that has not yet been made, and I can tell you there's going to be a response to that on the part of environmentalists, and I hope, you know, your listeners will be involved in that response.
What can they do?
Well, there are a couple things you can do right now, and again, I think this is a story that's the reason I wrote this book is not to hang more doom and gloom about the oceans. In fact, I think it's a very hopeful story because you do have these two individuals who no one else was going after this issue at the time. No one was saying, oh, the Navy's got to stop using sonars. It was these two people, a scientist and an attorney, who both believed that there was a connection that had not yet been established beyond a reasonable doubt, but there was a firm evidence trail, and they went about making sure that the Navy cleaned up their act. And I think that we can continue as citizens to put pressure on the Navy, because they're our Navy after all, and they are accountable to the law, even though they get special privileges being the military. They are accountable to the national environmental laws. So, you know, just for starters, there are two petitions out there, one from Natural Resources Defense Council, which has been the group that's been suing the Navy for 20 years now, has a petition that just launched today asking President Obama to, and he can do this. I mean, he is the commander-in-chief. And so, you know, you can talk about the Navy culture and the courts, but the fact of the matter is the commander-in-chief could, by executive order, order the Navy to stop training in known whale habitats tomorrow if he so chose. And so this petition is asking him to do that, and there's another parallel petition on MoveOn.org to the same effect. And it's really, you know, Mr. President, you're the commander-in-chief. You can solve this problem. Do it today. That's not a bad place to start.
No, and people need to speak up. Just all too often we see that the scare tactics around national security, whether it be militarily or energy-related, people get so vocal on it. But if we don't have a balanced feedback to the decision makers, we're going to lose our voice. So I hope our listeners take your direction, read the book.
You know what? And more and more now you hear stories about how, you know, people get active and they make a difference in a lot more in commercial, you know, where you're telling Walmart to please remove something from their shelves, whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. But if enough people speak up, they have to pay attention.
Well, politics is a retail business.
Yeah, actually. Right.
And so there is not one elected politician, even if, like Obama, he's not up for re-election. He's very concerned about his legacy, and he needs all the goodwill he can from the voters. And so everybody's responsive to public opinion, and so if you can make your voice heard, it will be heard. And I think it's the best thing about our democracy, if you will, is that, you know, individuals can speak out, and the Internet has facilitated that. And, you know, I think people do need to get engaged.
Well, and folks like you who are, you know, paying attention, bringing out these stories fabulously. And I thank you for the work you're doing and for getting out there and helping us understand more and more. I really didn't understand about noise pollution under the water, but it's, you know, something I'm going to be talking about and paying attention to.
Well, the last thing I want to say and signing off is that this is, you know, I've written this book. I'm a reader as well as a writer, and I wrote this book as a gripping, page-turning detective story, which is what it is, and it's a true-life one, but I wanted it to be as good a read as possible because we all want to be told a good story, and this is I like to think of it, and it's been cited as a great David and Goliath kind of story, and I think people will enjoy it just for its story value and hopefully, you know, get educated along the way about this issue.
So again, it's warofthewhales.com.
Yep, that's the website, and the name of the book is War of the Whales. It's available everywhere. It just came out 3 weeks ago, and so it shouldn't be hard to find.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks again.
And keep up the great work.
Someone's calling in. It sounds like we have sonar.
Yeah, it sounds like sonar in the background here.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks,
I really appreciate
it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hope you enjoyed that as much as they did. Please visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. For more fun podcasts and information on the Green Divas and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green. You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's THE greendivas.com.